Hello, everyone, and welcome to another edition of the Midwest Hemp Council Weekly Podcast, brought to you by the Bose Public Affairs Group at Bose, McKinney & Evans. I'm your host, Jason Dozier. Thanks so much for being with us this week. On today's program, we'll hear from Patrick Ryan, Chief Operations Officer and Director of Cultivation with Half Moon Hemp in Fortville, Indiana. We'll also get some Midwest Hemp Council updates from President and Co-Founder Justin Swanson. But first, we speak with Patrick. Patrick, how you doing today?
Doing all right. Just a busy day at the farm, getting everything watered and taken care of. The plants are all looking happy, so I'm happy.
Well, there you go. Happy plants make happy farmers. Tell us, where is your farm? What do you do on the farm? Give us a little bit of background about your experience there.
Yeah, absolutely. Half Moon Hemp is based in Fortville, Indiana. So that's just a little bit north of Indianapolis, by about 30 minutes. We operate with three separate facilities on the same campus. And we utilize one for just making seeds and for breeding and flowering plants out. Our other one is our main office, which we also have overflow breeding in. And our main building is our production facility that you'll see on our social media, like Instagram and Facebook, where we produce our mother plants and our clones. And that's our main operation. So
So you're only working with hemp?
Yes. Yeah. The only thing that we work with is hemp. We've been licensed since July last year, and we took the entire year 2019 to just do research and development. So we actually didn't even go out and sell any product last year. We just spent the entire growing season while people were outdoors, compiling all the genetics we could get our hands on and choosing what we thought was going to perform the best in the Midwest.
How many acres did you plant last year?
All of our stuff is done inside.
Oh, okay. So it's all greenhouse.
No, actually, it's all indoor setting. So we utilize grow rooms, and more people will be familiar with grow tents more likely.
Sure.
Those allow us to have small, very dialable systems that we can have certain climate settings for each variety. They also allow us to do stress testing, working with pest resistance, which is our main deal. So our researcher is Marguerite Bolt, and
you're not gonna find much better than Marguerite Bolt.
Oh no, she's great. Yeah, she's a wealth of knowledge, and we're really happy to have her on the team. Under her guidance, we did some pest resistance studies basically on our varieties, and we released in a controlled setting aphids and spider mites onto our selections to see what their resistance was going to be in a lab setting.
Now, Patrick, when I said the word greenhouse, you emphatically said no, we grow indoors. What's the difference in the tents and indoor growing versus a greenhouse?
Right. So a greenhouse, you're going to obviously get the free light. You don't have to pay for the lights. Our indoor setting is with grow tents. We use artificial lighting. So that's a combination of high intensity LEDs and in some setting fluorescence as well. We're also able to control the HVAC system. With greenhouses, you can maintain a steady temperature, humidity. However, you're still dealing with the elements. And so if you have a cloudy week, that's some productivity you've lost, whereas we're able to have a very defined way to go test our products. And we can also forecast a little bit better with that setting because we know that those elements are going to be changing.
So does this give you an unlimited amount of time to be able to grow? Like, can you grow 365 then? So there's no season for you.
Yeah, our season is every single day of the week. And we have someone here basically all the time. Every single day, there's going to be a grower here. If it's not me, it's one of our assistant growers and our team members looking over the plants and making sure they're happy. So we definitely have that advantage that, you know, when snow's starting to fall and people are trying to scramble to get things in the greenhouse, you know, we're already full on in seed testing and making new batches of seeds. And we really have a lot of options open with that.
Last year, you grew for the experience and to get the knowledge and information. What will Half Moon Hemp offer the community and offer buyers? What is your product going to be?
So the product that we offer is clones. And for those who aren't familiar, clones are about a 5 to 7 inch tall cutting, which would be about 3 nodes of a hemp plant. And those are cut off of a mother plant and rooted. Those retain the genetic uniformity throughout an entire field because they are genetically the same. Through feminized seed processes, you do get very similar phenotypes, which would be all the characteristics of a plant that makes it that type of plant. Mm-hmm. However, you do get some more variation through that process. With clones, you're really able to dial it in and know exactly what your plants need throughout the entire field. And you're able to scale the metrics a little bit easier as well.
And you're also able to guarantee a basically 99% rate of female plants.
Yes, absolutely. And that's been another issue with people that have bought feminized seeds from, trusted companies, brand new companies all over the place. I've heard horror stories from a lot of people from last year that planted feminized seeds, ended up having their crop seeded, and they lost a substantial amount of cannabinoid production because of that. Another advantage of the clones is that they're more hardy for heavy rains and cold mornings. So, these days in Indiana are getting less and less predictable as far as weather goes. My parents just sent me a video this morning of it snowing up in Fort Wayne. And so, that was a main complaint with farmers as well that planted seeds, is that if it rains directly after, they don't perform extraordinarily well in wet conditions, whereas clones fared a lot better.
And I believe that snow is heading more toward Indianapolis here in the next day or so. It's creeping south, so we're still not out of winter yet, apparently, and that can, of course, cause a lot of problems for farmers, people growing, getting that seed in the ground. So with clones, as compared to seeds, obviously the clones are already started. So how much of a head start do farmers get using clones instead of the seed?
Well, on average, we've seen farmers get about a 2 to 3 week advantage over a seedling. And that being said, the production time as well for getting a seed cracked and then to the size of a clone is about 5 weeks. Mm-hmm. Whereas we can take a cutting off of a mother plant and get it to our customer in about 14 days or 2 weeks. And we're very confident and stand by those numbers as well. So not only is our turnover a little bit quicker and we can, supply in a quicker method, but, we do believe we can stand by our product a lot more than as if we were offering a seedling.
And, of course, the difference between a seed and a clone, the clone is already there. It's already taken root. The seed, you're hoping that it's going to take root. Let's take an average, let's say a 1 acre plot. What's the cost difference with clones versus seeding that plot?
The price of seed is definitely varying a lot more. And as the coronavirus impacts our economy as far as hemp goes, we're seeing the price of seed dropping. Last year, the average was about $1 per seed. So, if you're drilling your seed at, 2,000 plants per, acre, you're looking at about $2,000 per acre. The unfortunate thing for a lot of people was that the germination rates have been poor. Marguerite actually wrote an article up that recently that even detailed all of those metrics. And we saw that about, 80 to 70% was a good germination rate. And there was a lot of people that had even worse than that. Mm-hmm. Right now we're offering clones for $2 a piece across the board. We believe that is where the market's going to stay for a little bit. It is the cheapest that we can offer it at. And I do believe we have a better product than anyone else out there.
And how many clones will you have available to sell this year?
We're able to do roughly about 45,000 clones per week.
Okay.
We've already got quite a few commitments from farmers, but we're still definitely taking on more orders. And for the greenhouse growers, the extended season growers, we are definitely your supplier that you want to look at, because we're able to be taking those plants through the seasons in a very healthy manner, where we're not having to deal with the elements and the ups and downs of nature that way.
And how many clones do you anticipate selling, or what is your goal for this entire year?
Well, the sky's the limit right now. Realistically, we'd be shooting for about $500,000. Mm-hmm. And I think that our market can sustain that. A lot of people are definitely keeping their cards close to their chest right now because of the way that the economy's looking. However, we have seen a whole lot of interest in people coming back last year that had 1 or 2 acres that are wanting to reinvest that money into it again. I think we all know that there is a lot of uncertainty right now. What I can say is that this is also weeding out a lot of the bad people in our industry. Mm-hmm. And we've seen a lot of jokers that, we're giving out some really bad advice and some bad product, and they aren't around anymore.
Right. There we go. Patrick Ryan, Chief Operations Officer and Director of Cultivation at Half Moon Hemp. Now, again, last year was the first year for Half Moon Hemp in growing their clones. And again, you were doing it more for an education value and statistics, information, that sort of thing. What got you personally involved? Let's back up a little bit. What got you personally involved in the hemp industry? And give us a little bit about your journey into it.
Sure. So my experience in growing started about a decade ago. I used to run a hydroponic store up in the Fort Wayne area. It was the main hub for hydroponics and organic gardening in the area. That's where I really fell in love with the process. I decided to commit my life to agriculture. I went to school for Ivy Tech for agriculture in Fort Wayne. Mm-hmm. From there, I started, my first job running farms, where I ran an operation called Get Fresh Farms. They were a 10,000-gallon aquaponics operation. I've run a number of large food operations, doing tomatoes, bulk basil for large producers and the like. At my most recent venture, which was another large indoor operation, I ended up contracting out some work with another hemp company, and that kind of got me introduced to the possibility of working with hemp in Indiana. I've always been a huge proponent of hemp. I think that it is one of the most underutilized plants on the earth right now. Mm-hmm. That there's the sky's the limit with this plant, and we have a lot more to learn about it too. As soon as I saw that there was an opening to do this and do it right, my background in propagation, working in indoor growing, and knowing the right SOPs and the right integrated pest management systems to make it happen the right way, it was a no-brainer after that. So my business partner, Adam Gillette, he's our CEO. We teamed up and started brainstorming, and before we knew it, we had a location locked down, and fortunately, have a couple of really great friends in the legal cannabis industry over in Illinois that were nice enough to help me obtain some really quality genetics. And that's pretty much what started it all.
Well, it sounds like the 2018 Farm Bill was perfect timing for you and your scale into this.
Yes, absolutely. And it's kind of funny, too. I was on my way out of my last food growing operation. And I was actually being courted by a couple of companies up in Michigan to work in the cannabis industry there when this opportunity opened up. And, the first year I had seen a lot of people that I think they assumed that hemp was a different product than what it is. It's a very highly intensive crop. It takes a lot of skill and a lot of knowledge to grow it. And you can't just jump in from, another industry and really crush it. And I knew that our team, and myself included, we had the skills to step in and do it right. And that's what, that's what's been the goal from day one, is just quality products, period. We want our farmers to perform as best as they can, and we want them to be coming back year after year and having a successful growing year.
Well, and that brings us back to the clone genetics and why selections testing is so important. Again, that's what you guys do. So it sounds like that's right up your alley.
Yeah, absolutely. And we've spent countless hours and a lot of money to get our products tested. We go through stress testing to make sure our plants aren't going to hermaphrodite in the field. That way, if a farmer has a drip line failure and the plants dry a little bit past a healthy point, they're not going to pop out flowers and pollinate their whole field. That's a pretty common, issue. We also test them against the pests, like I'd mentioned before. And, you know, we do just all kinds of different testing in-house, and our labs are just a perfect setting for that as well, because we're able to control those. We also do a lot of lab testing, and get our stuff, tested as far as cannabinoid content and terpene quality as well. We're doing week by week studies as well, so we can really see where those curves start, so we can give honest and accurate information to people about the cannabinoid content of our products.
And are most people that are coming to you, are they mostly traditional farmers? Are you seeing folks that are looking for something to put in a greenhouse or a tent? What kind of breakdown do you have as far as those folks coming to you?
I'd say that traditional farmers are definitely looking a lot more into this crop with a serious eye. Last year, it was a lot more entrepreneurs. That being said, there was a lot of people that didn't really have a lot of experience in commercial agriculture that still did fine. You know, I'd say fine, not great, because I do feel like there's a lot to learn from everyone here, and our growing in our environment. It's been about 200 years since we could legally cultivate this plant in the field. Outdoors, it's a whole different ball game, and so I do feel like we're learning a whole lot collectively.
Now, Patrick, is there anything else that we need to hit on here that I haven't brought up in our conversation about Half Moon Hemp?
Yeah, I just want to go over a couple things that I would tell a farmer to look for when he's looking for clones. Mm-hmm. You want to look at someone with experience in propagation. You know, our team has about 30 years collectively working in commercial agriculture. Every single farm that I've worked at, cloning and asexual propagation has been a large part of that. Mm-hmm. You want agriculture support. You know, we've got Christy Apple up in Michigan as our agriculture consultant, and she can help people with crop management. And the other big one that I'd really love to stress is learning how to read COAs. That is a huge thing that people are missing, and there's a lot of misinformation going around in the industry right now, especially locally. There's a lot of people that are saying that, you know, they can get 20% cannabinoids or 20% CBD out of their hemp and still have non-detectable THC. I'm here to tell you that it's genetically not possible. And this comes from someone that makes the genetics himself. I'm not buying seeds from another company and making clones of their product. We are actually making genes, you know, ourselves that are new to this world. And from all the studies that we've read, all the, you know, PhDs that we've talked to, it is not possible to hit these numbers with a total THC compliance of 0.3%. Now, that being said, it doesn't mean that we can't grow CBD hemp in Indiana. It just means that we need to be realistic and honest when we're approaching our customers. Mm. And that's why we, you know, advertise, you know, you're probably going to get around 10 to 11% CBD. That's a really great number. And you're going to stay within that compliance level too. So if, you know, whatever avenue you want to go with processing, you're going to be good to go as far as transport. A lot of people are in a sticky situation, pun intended, because of smokable flower and a lot of that not meeting compliance right now. And I know that that's even getting hotly debated right now in the state house. And sure, I'm sure Dustin can speak, you know, a lot more to that right now. But I would really stress farmers, if you're going to be spending a lot of money on this, you really need to learn how to read a COA, and you also need to learn how to read if someone's, you know, selling you a whole bunch of hot air, because we're trying to spread the truth out here, but we can only do so much. So I would support everyone to get as informed as possible on reading COAs and learning what the true genetic potential of hemp is as far as our guidelines go.
And of course, if folks want more information from you, from Half Moon Hemp, they can get that on the internet.
Right now, we're not accepting visitors because of the coronavirus. However, we do have a virtual tour. And if people are looking for, you know, they want sample product, they'd like to talk to some of our customers, they can get a hold of our sales team. Our number is 317-747-4272. And they can also find all of our contacts and all of our information at halfmoonhemp.com. We're taking pre-orders right now for clones. If you just have questions about getting into hemp in general, we'd love to talk to you. We are really committed to this plant, and we really believe in furthering hemp in Indiana.
Fantastic. Patrick Ryan, Chief Operations Officer and Director of Cultivation at Half Moon Hemp. Look them up. Check them out. When this virus is over, you can go visit. Not till then, of course. But that's the world we live in right now, isn't it, Patrick?
Yeah, absolutely. We just got to adapt to it. You know, we're staying here, and I think we're going to come out on the other end of this a lot stronger.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Once again, Patrick, we appreciate your time, and we appreciate everything you're doing for the hemp industry.
Well, thank you. Thanks for having me.
All right. And as we continue on, we're going to speak with Justin Swanson. Justin is the president of the Midwest Hemp Council, also vice president of Bose Public Affairs Group at Bose McKinney and Evans. Justin, how you doing today?
Always good to be back, Jason. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, I guess we'll stay on the coronavirus topic this week and start that off with a letter that the Midwest Hemp Council was involved in, sent to the U.S. Small Business Administration regarding local farmers, Midwest farmers, and some funds, trying to obtain funds for those farmers. Justin, why don't you tell us what that's all about?
Yeah, so I'm sure everyone listening hasn't heard enough about the COVID-19 stuff, so we'll start there. But really, Eric Steenstra, from with Vote Hemp, who's a really strong national advocate for the entire hemp industry, mm-hmm. Did a great job of organizing some of the a few of the other leading organizations around the country and submitting a letter to SBA. Asking to make sure that farmers, including hemp farmers, are included, are actually eligible for what's called the Economic Injury Disaster Loan Program. Mm-hmm. And that essentially allows small businesses to apply for up to, a $10,000 advance that they do not have to pay back. And really the intent there is to help mitigate any sudden loss of sales or other revenue streams for the small businesses.
Would they not fall under the other guidelines that are already out there? Why would this be something that needs to be added?
So typically, Congress is really careful not to allow certain groups to kind of double or triple dip on federal programs. Mm-hmm. And so typically, USDA will take care of the farmers in terms of what they're doing there.
Is there not a program out right now as of today that would allow these farmers to get these funds without this moving forward?
Not that I'm aware of. That was kind of the intent of the letter, was to point that out and say, hey, USDA hasn't done anything. We want to make sure you're aware that, you know, there's no chance for double dipping, since, you know, this is really our only option right now.
And when was this letter already sent?
We sent it on Monday.
Okay.
Submitted it to them, and then we also sent it to Secretary Perdue over at USDA as well.
Okay. Any feedback on that yet?
We just sent it on Monday, and typically, I'm sure if anyone hears anything, it'd probably be Eric. But we'll be sure to update our members as soon as we hear something.
All right. Well, we'll be looking forward to that. And also, we've got an update on hemp flower litigation. Someone was asking me about this last week, sending me an email saying, when is hemp flower going to be legal in Indiana? As I was scratching my head, like, well, you know, you can go down to the store and buy it right now. But, you know, a lot of confusion out there about it. So give us an update on that.
Yeah. So we actually had the Seventh Circuit took oral arguments over the phone, actually, on Tuesday morning. We were the first case in the docket. Each side, the state had, they started and they had 20 minutes. They reserved 5 minutes for rebuttal. And then we also, after that, had 20 minutes as well. It was kind of interesting from an attorney standpoint, and probably not so much from anyone who's not an attorney, but we had a three-judge panel, and how this works in the Seventh Circuit is you don't find out who's on your panel until the day of. So the panel actually spent with the state about, you know, 10 to 13 minutes of their 15 minutes discussing Rule 65D of the Federal Rules of Procedure. Mm-hmm. So it's a very wonky thing, but basically that rule requires a district judge to issue an injunction and the opinion on two separate documents. So basically, you have to have your injunction typed out on a separate page, piece of paper. And that did not happen. And so that's kind of what
you have to submit that on a floppy disk and CD-ROM as well.
Well, yeah, there's rules for just about everything you do here. And that's, you know, kind of the design of the legal system. So that wasn't very interesting for probably for most of our listeners. We did have a really good chance to get into the merits of the case, you know, really focusing on this idea that there's this big conflict between, you know, the definition of the federal definition of hemp and how Indiana has defined it by criminalizing part of the plant.
And again, now, can they go down right now and buy hemp flower in Indiana?
Yes. So you followed up with a good direct question. Yes, you can. It's still legal in Indiana. And it'll remain legal until we get there's really three options that the Seventh Circuit can do now. And there's unfortunately no date certain on when we're going to get an order from the Seventh Circuit. Mm-hmm. It could be a couple weeks or a couple months. It's totally up to their discretion. But there's really three options. One, they can affirm the district court's decision to of awarding us a preliminary injunction, which is the best case scenario for, I think, farmers in the hemp industry in general. The second option is the Seventh Circuit can remand it or basically send it back down to the district court with instructions on how to make a new ruling, basically. And the state was actually in agreement with us on this part, where that would be a pretty big waste of time to remand that back down to the district court, just so the judge can issue, you know, follow Rule 65D. That would be kind of a waste of resources on both sides.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
I'm sorry. And real quick, and the third option is it's the district court or the Seventh Circuit decides to reverse the district court's order and rule in the state's favor.
And Justin, give us a timeline, if you could, real quick on this entire process. The hemp flower was deemed illegal in Indiana. The judge overturned that, and now you guys are fighting to keep that overturned on a permanent basis. Would that be a good overview?
That's exactly right. So this litigation started in July of 2019. We got a ruling, I believe, sometime in September. The state appealed, and then we just had our oral arguments on Tuesday morning.
And Justin, we've been through this a lot. We've talked about this a lot, covered it a lot throughout the last year on the podcast. But again, we have new listeners every week, every month. Tell us again why this is a problem with the hemp flower in Indiana.
Really, the state's position is it interferes with their state police powers on regulating and enforcing other controlled substances law. Hemp flower does look and smell like marijuana flower on site. So we understand that. And, you know, we as an industry have legislator Representative Sean Eberhardt introduced a bill to address those concerns constitutionally. And it doesn't go so far as to criminalize the plant, but it just sets in kind of codifies industry best practices when you're buying and consuming hemp flower. And that's kind of what I think everyone believes is the case, is we just need clear guidance on how to operate appropriately. We want to work with law enforcement to make sure that farmers have every, option that's available to them when it comes to the new plant. Because that was really, you know, congressional intent and the state's intent, the Indiana General Assembly's intent, giving new options to farmers and attracting younger and new farmers back to the farm.
And is this something that does public opinion matter in this at this point? Is there something people can do to voice their concern, or is that already passed?
So the court system's really designed not to react to public opinion. Really, it's a legal question here. But certainly, everyone listening needs to really directly engage their legislators at the state and federal level. To talk about the benefits of the industry, you know, acknowledge that, yeah, it's new, but, you know, we think this is going to be a long-term revenue source for our farm. And, so the communication with policymakers should never stop, and it should only get more and more frequent and more in depth. People in the industry should view themselves as educators and educate lawmakers and policymakers on what it is and what it's not, and, you know, best practices, and let them understand that, that this is a real industry and it's going to be very, very big. If we can get some farmer friendly regulations set up, that also maintains the integrity of the hemp market.
And again, when should we get some more details on this? When will there be some more movement?
Again, we won't have a date certain on that. It could be a couple weeks up to a couple months. Basically, the court has taken both the state and the industry's arguments under advisement, and we're just kind of sitting and waiting for an order to come out.
Okay. Meanwhile, people can still go down and, well, if they can go down and socially distance and all that good stuff, they can still buy their hemp flower in Indiana until that ruling comes down, and then hopefully as well after.
That's right.
All right, so let's move on, Justin. We got some exciting stuff happening with the Midwest Hemp Council involved with the Make Hump Day Hemp Day. It's a webinar series, and you can go to the website, and you can't miss it. There's a couple big graphics there, and this thing's going on for several weeks. Yesterday, well, it goes on every Wednesday. Yesterday was the seeds, seedlings, and clones topic. Next week will be regulatory updates, right up your alley there. Oh, and I see you'll actually on the forum, you'll be speaking about that. So I guess perfect timing, Justin. Go ahead and tell us what this Hemp Day Hump Day is all about in your words.
Yeah, so this is an awesome webinar series that started April 1st and running through May 13th. And each week is kind of, like you mentioned, is it focuses on a different topic, trying to get everyone comfortable with making sure our farmers and other businesses who are looking at entering the hemp market or hemp industry, making sure they're thinking, you know, a few steps ahead rather than just entering it. It's what are you going to do with it? And where do you think you can leverage your expertise to help build the supply chain here in the Midwest? We'll have Don Robinson on from the he's a seed administrator in the Office of the Indiana State Chemist. And he's a seed commissioner as well. And I'll be on there. We'll both be talking really about the regulatory effects and impacts here in Indiana. And also I'll be giving an update on the hemp litigation, kind of what you heard today. Mm-hmm. And I also kind of help everyone understand the difference between Delta 9 states and total THC states and why that needs to matter and why you need to understand, you know, where your customer is or where your supplier is to make sure you're abiding by the laws in your state.
All right. Fantastic. That'll be next week, April 22nd. But again, this is a 7-week program where, well, next week we'll be halfway through that or a little more than halfway through that. But the archives are also on the website, or at least there's a link there. So go there and check all that out, like Justin said, and you can get all that great information. Justin, is there anything else we need to touch on this week?
No, I just hope everyone stays safe, and I hope you take some time while you're here to contact your legislators and let them know what you're up to.
Yeah, because they definitely want to hear from you.
Absolutely.
And if they don't, well, that's just a little too bad, isn't it?
Yeah.
All right, Justin, we do appreciate it. Once again, speaking with Justin Swanson, Midwest Hemp Council President. Justin's also Vice President of Bose Public Affairs Group of Council at Bose, McKinney, and Evans. Justin, as always, thanks for being with us, and that was some great information.
Thanks, Jason.
All right, take care. And that's going to do it for our show this week. Thanks for listening to the Midwest Hemp Council Weekly Podcast, brought to you by the Bose Public Affairs Group at Bose, McKinney, and Evans. You can find more information about the Midwest Hemp Council, as well as our entire catalog of podcasts, on our website, MidwestHempCouncil.com. I'm your host, Jason Dozier. Thanks for tuning in, and we will be back next week with more. So long, everybody.